everybody. Thanks for coming. My name is Grace Meyer, and I'm going to talk to you today about a real-life case study that we had at Mango Solutions. So my talk is called Too Good for Your Own Good, Shiny Prototypes Out of Control. So firstly, I'm going to talk about, introduce myself. Then I'm going to talk about our case study, about the shiny prototype that we developed, and then how it was so good that our client put it straight into production without us wanting it to be. Yeah. And then also I'm going to tell you about how we faced into this and the lessons that we learned along the way so you can learn from our experience as well. So a little bit about me. I'm a senior data scientist at Mango Solutions. I'm also an Our Lady's mentor in London. Previously, I was a team lead for an analytics team at one of the big Gulf 3 airlines, and I also have an engineering degree specializing in operations research. Okay, so also happy birthday, Harry Potter, you turned 20. So shiny is great. I think that we all know that it's the app technology that's allowing us to share our results interactively with our end users. And I've seen the end users really engaging with our results. We're giving them something that they can work with. It's not just a flat document and things like this. And it's also really easy for us to get an app up and running. It's really quick, and also it looks really good. So taking Stack Overflow as a bit of a proxy for usage here, you can see that that's the blue line and ggplot2 is the orange. So it's really in a boom time. At Mango, we think that about 30% of our current projects have some part that's shiny related. And I talked with someone from DataCamp yesterday, and they said that there's a big buzz around shiny. So it's really, you know, a booming technology in kind of the R community. So onto our case study. So we're working with a client who had a large team who were interacting with their customers. And what they wanted as a first step was a tool where they could go and get all of their customers' information really quickly and kind of in a user-friendly manner. And then when they did an action, when they had a call, when they offered them something, when they got a complaint, then they could record that as well. Then as a second step, after the data read and write really, they wanted to include analytics, so churn, lifetime value, and also next best step recommendation. What should I be offering this customer to get customer loyalty, then more money? So they went to their IT team, who said it's going to cost £500,000 and take a year to make some specifications. Not even create anything, just specifications. Is this something that we've all heard before? I have, yep. And so this is where we came in. So our goal was to basically demonstrate the benefit of a potential tool. So really proof of concept so that they could go inside their company and get some, you know, internal traction about making this tool. So you say, why shiny? Well, their small data science team knew R and had dabbled in shiny, so it was a familiar technology. Later on, for some more advanced analytics, it would be so easy because, you know, R's really great, it's got everything. And as before, really fast to get up and running, looks really good. So we got something into their hands in 3 months, and we released it into a small demo group of about 15 people. And they loved it. They basically were like saying, this is exactly what we wanted. We can get all of our information in one place. It's super easy. We also gave them some churn, which they were wowed at because they'd never seen anything like that before. Also, they'd never even reported on their sales performance before. So they were sitting there saying, wow, for the first time, we'll be able to measure how we're actually, you know, performing with our customers. Shiny, super, you know, user-friendly, looks great straight out of the box, pretty much. So they really, really loved it. As soon as they got a hold of it, they started to say, okay, you know, what would this actually like? Then they were like, oh, we've just split our team into two. So can you kind of make two different kind of user groups in there? Can you add some new features? Or we just added a new product. Can you add some buttons in here? Or we like it like this. So they really started to use the technology, which was really great in the fact that, you know, they started to say, what would a refined product look like? And then they did something that we never really expected in our wildest dreams. They basically gave access to their whole team. And because it was a great tool, you know, their users could, you know, save time and do a better job, and then they could measure their success. And it kind of caught on like wildfire. And then suddenly went from our 15 people demo group to, like, in about a month, to 150 people using it daily. On the other hand, we saw some amazing improvement in sales conversion. They, like, straight off the bat, within a month, they were starting to make money off this tool, which was actually really cool. We were, that concept was proved. So really where we were was that it was a complete business success. However, we had some hesitations as the developers of this tool that it wasn't the most safe. We'd given them something that looked good and did exactly what they wanted, but didn't have the kind of robustness or any safety equipment there. Also, because they'd kind of given us specifications and drips and drabs, it wasn't the most efficient under the hood. The code was good, but we, as developers, we could see that there were some obvious efficiencies that we could put into place. So the challenges we faced were basically that we had a prototype, a proof of concept, which was now a business-critical tool, but it didn't have any of the full deployment rigor. So it had no server redundancy, so if there was a crash, they could lose data and the tool would go down. Testing wasn't comprehensive. We had some unit testing, but definitely not full code coverage at this point for proof of concept, which meant that if we released a bug onto the system, we would have to fix it afterwards, which always takes more than doing it right up front. As well, the code inefficiencies, I said, and also we only had basic documentation. So especially when we had new people come onto the team, it was quite hard for them to pick it up. So how did we face into this? First, a lot of client education. We met with them a lot, and saying things like, if this server crashes, what would the impact be if, you know, you didn't have your tool for 2 to 4 days? What would that be in a dollar sense? Because that's what really mattered to them. I'm going to be honest here. It's very hard to get this traction once they already have a tool that they think is working fantastically. They don't really see that, you know, actually there's a whole suite of kind of work that needs to be done here. So then we prioritized a fix list. It was basically from the last slide, server redundancy, testing, efficiencies and streamlining, and then documentation. And they said, we can't pay for it all in one lot. And we were like, okay. So then we just kind of prioritized and we did it kind of in chunks, so improving it bit by bit. As well, since it was a tool that was in kind of production, whenever they asked for anything, we then made sure that basically any new feature followed full deployment protocol. So it did have unit tests. If it was in a function that was already existing, could we streamline it there? Or, you know, testing for edge cases and things like this. I'd say, you know, we're a consultancy, so, you know, we obviously needed to get approval for budget, but if you are having these same issues in an internal team, you'll need to get budget for server redundancy, but you're already still working. You've got a full job, so you're still going to have to somehow get them to give you the time from your regular day job to put this all in the background as well. So you'll be facing the same kind of client engagement about, you know, actually these are, you know, things that we need to spend our time on. So I know that we're not the only business that has faced this issue. I had a chat with a different business. They had set up 35 Shiny apps over the last year. Now they were pretty much all live, and they were asking Mango to come in and do exactly all the same. You know, they had no unit testing. All of the kind of deployment rigor wasn't there, especially in the first like the first apps where they were pretty much just experimenting, and then they just pushed them out. So I know that there are lots of people out there in the same position. I also think that Shiny was really kind of marketed as a quick prototyper, but unless you've already got a front end, like if you're an Airbnb, great, you can prototype and then put it into your production. But if you're just in our house, you're probably actually not going to have this translated into a different language. Shiny is standing by itself now. So, you know, it's not really a rapid prototyper. Your tool will be so good that they will want it to keep around. So, you know, just bear in mind that, you know, too good for your own good, really. You know, what you do is going to be fantastic. They're going to love it. They're going to want more. And you'll be like, oh, okay. So the best practice that, you know, we already knew most of this, but that we follow kind of like our new religion and would have helped us in this project, the first one would be control the tester group. So if we had only allowed 15 people to use that, they never could have, you know, taken it out of the control of us. Now, with 150 people, our user group was 15. If your user group is 15, then your test group has to be 2, you know? So control your test group if you're only in a prototype. The next one is realistic timeframes. Sure thing, I can prototype this in 2 days. But remember, we're not prototyping anymore because they're going to want it forever. So, you know, you probably need to put in an extra, at least half buffer by saying, you know, to follow this rigor. And I think that that's something that a lot of our developers at the moment are kind of getting caught up on. They say, yeah, I can jump to, I can do this really quickly. Slow down, do it properly right from the start. Server redundancy, yep. Testing, so GUI and unit testing. Gabor has a Shiny test package that we're kind of experimenting with at the moment, so I'm going to hope to see him. If you're interested, you could go and talk to him about it. Dependencies, we pretty much set them up for all of our packages from the get-go, so we use PackRat for that. Documentation, so that, you know, your new team members can know what, you know, is going on when they come onto the project. And phased approach releases. So they're going to, you know, a lot of your clients, as I said, they're going to love it. They're going to want more. So, you know, instead of that initial feature that was going to take 2 days, we'll do it right in 4 days and follow deployment rigor. But then also don't give it to them after 4 days. You know, clump all of your features together in normal, you know, software protocol, so that then you've got much more time to kind of integrate them together and do proper testing. So that's what we learned, and this is what we follow from the get-go now. We don't prototype, we don't proof of concept. We might sell that to our client, but actually under the hood, we create, you know, fully deployment ready Shiny apps now. Are there any questions? Shiny test. So I don't know everything about it, but it's something that we're exploring in this. So the question was about version control and documentation. We've got it all on Git. So, yeah, normal. Yeah, okay, so unit test using test that and GUI test, we're experimenting with Gabor's package Shiny test. Anything else? Oh, yeah, one more.
Great, thank you for your talk, first of all. A great talk. I think some clients like it, and we can say they get addicted to it once they have
So the question is, they're running business decisions on a pilot or on a prototype. To be honest, we didn't do anything different with the, you know, with the database access and the analytics afterwards. So actually, the tool was kind of ready to go, except for to be honest, to go into a full one, all of that development that they kind of did once they finally saw it, we would have liked to have packaged that up, slowed that down, you know, done it really properly. Yeah. Okay, so on app building, should you build a large app or should you kind of build a small one and then build up? If you know it's going to be a big app, I think that you should design for the big app, but of course you'll build it in phases. In turn, releasing with customers, I'd probably put maybe a couple of milestones. So if you've got a very large app, you've probably, let's just say, maybe you've got 10 development phases, and you show them very strategically, very controlled. Don't give them access to everything, because then they'll just run away with it and show it to everyone. And then at milestones, show them kind of what's happening. So kind of like normal things. But what happened in this one, because it kind of did run away, where they added on features, and we were already in this kind of mid-develop or deployment phase, I wouldn't recommend that, no.